Yes, it's a hyperbolic space, and the symmetries are discrete subgroups of the group of motions of the space. So this is kind of hyperbolic geometry side. And the other geometry is algebraic geometry. So this is you, instead of this space, you consider algebraic variety. And just for maybe just let's stick to surfaces. And in the first lecture in the colloquium, I suggest you can do it more general. But all interesting examples somehow, which I know really mostly come from algebraic surfaces. And say something more in my last lecture about higher dimensional thing. So okay, so this could be considered complex algebraic surfaces, and they're always considered as manifolds. So they're like, if you forget about algebraic equation, they're just complex manifolds of dimension two, projected varieties. And there's just the motions here, the symmetry here will be just subgroup of the discrete part of this automorphic group. So you take full symmetries of the algebraic variety of like automorphs of this variety of itself, and it has a, and cut it out the continuous part of this group. So there will be connected component of identity. This is a Lie group, which is a like positive dimensional algebraic variety, which happens also to be a group. And what's left will be just family of connected components of this group, which could be infinite. And this is the most interesting case. In fact, so the relationship between, so this is kind of hyperbolic geometry part, and this is algebraic geometry side. And the link between them is just representation of this group. In symmetries of some discrete object which you associate to surface. So what we do just we consider the what we call numerical lattice. So we consider all two cocycles in second cohomology group, which come from algebraic subvarieties, from algebraic curves. And they form subgroup of the group of cohomology, and we kill the torsion. And then this will be free abelian group equipped with the bilinear form, which really corresponds to cup product in topology. Or in algebraic geometry, just its own what's called intersection theory of divisors on algebraic surface, which kind of works over any field and very abstract. So this is symmetric bilinear form. Of course, you can also think there is a quadratic form associated to Z. And if you, I consider this, so this is free abelian group, which I don't want to use this. This is too bad. Maybe they're called R. And this will be kind of traditionally goes from Severi, called Severi, Neron Severi number, just so Severi, Picard number of algebraic series. So you can really, this is free abelian group, equipped with quadratic form, but if you take tensor with real numbers, this. Then it's just real vector space, and it has signature with of this row minus one. Okay. And so we consider, and then just of course, this is a Minkowski Lorentzian space, and you can go further to hyperbolic space by taking the image of positive cone in the real projective space. And this is a relationship. So just we take this really subgroup of the GL of this Z row, and of course this is a subgroup which preserves this symmetric bilinear form. So sometimes we also do a little better. We pick up the canonical class, which I explained what is this. Every algebraic surface comes with certain canonical class in the second cohomology group, and we take it like mod in the mod torsion, and this will be some element here. And of course this is kind of preserves. It's really an orthogonal group which stabilizes certain particular vector. Sometimes this vector is trivial, so just you may erase it. And this is happens in the most interesting case, for example, when canonic class is zero. And this is if canonic class is zero, this leads to, for example, this K3 surface. Or it could be abelian variety. Or it could be Enrico surface. This is a small canonical class. It's the image of canonical class in this group because this is motor torsion. So it's the killing torsion. So abelian surfaces, this is just the algebraic analog of complex torsion. And this is what I'll give you an example of. So abelian surface, it's really a two-dimensional complex space motor lattice, which is a free abelian group of rank 4, which spans this C2. And case, so this is topology is very simple. This is topologically, this is diffeomorphic of four copies of circles. So this is very easy topological object. But K3 surface is more complicated and more interesting. In fact, this is topology of a toroid abelian surface. They certain kind of elementary particles in the four-dimensional topology. You can view four manifolds by kind of sometimes changing orientation from K3 surfaces and the projective plane and just toroid, I think. So K3 surface has a more complicated topology, like, for example, it's trivial fundamental group, so it's a simply connected surface. So you can't get it in any way like that as a quotient, so it's simply connected surface. So K3 surface has the same cohomology group. And this is of rank 22. And cup product is also very special. So just so because pi 1 is 0, it's also have no one-dimensional homology. So H1 is 0 by universal coefficients formula. So the cup product is a complete duality. This is a Poincaré theorem. So just like, so it means this is unimodular lattice. The unimodular lattice means this determinant, discriminant of this quadratic symmetric Bolini form is equal plus minus 1. So it's a unimodular lattice. It's also even. So even means just the value of any vector is even number. And then it has a signature, which I also explained in my colloquium, because you have Hausdorff decomposition if you take it with complex coefficients. And this is Hausdorff H2-0, H1-1, and H0-2. And this is just generated by one holomorphic form, so just so on the K3 surface after proportionality. And this follows from first chair class of 0, canonical class 0. This is generated by conjugate of this form. And this is space of dimension 20. And you compute the signature on each part, intersection with, of course, reals. And just this is Hodge index theorem tells us signatures 390. Altogether, it's 22, 3 positive square and 19 negative square. And now there is a Milner theorem. It classifies all unimodular quadratic form over integers of given signature, and which is also even. And this tells you this, like, as a lattice, it's just very, the following lattice. You take 3 copies of a hyperbolic plane.
What does it classify them as long as it's not definite, right?
Yeah. There must be indefinite lattice, right? So this is U plus U. Remember last time we already discuss why it's called hyperbolic plane. This is given by this quadratic form, by this matrix. And 3 copies of this lattice, all this orthogonal sum, I think. 8. And so again, I think I explained. So 8 corresponds to, you can give it graphically by this Dynkin diagram. So that means it's generated by 8 elements. Each element has norm, in my case, minus 2. So how helpful would be minus 1? Indicates it's negative definite. And the two this vectors has an inner product equal to 1 if they join by an H, otherwise the inner product here. It's just the way to give you a matrix. I can do this in a matrix, like static minus 2, 1, minus 2, and just, but it's kind of graphical way to define symmetric bilinear form by a matrix. Like every vertex corresponds to generator, it's free abelian group of rank A. You indicate what's the norm if you, it's norm like not equal to minus 2, you put something here. I don't put minus 2 because it's as small as possible. It's even. Right. So this is just so we know that just for all. So Picard lattice sits here in K3 surface.
I have a quick question. How do you know it's an even lattice?
Even lattice just comes from the what's called Wu formula, I think, here in Topal. It's really just you take canonical class and just mod 2, and then just this is just, if this is 0, then your form is even.
Okay, like characteristic vectors or something?
Yeah,
right.
And so this is sits here, but of course this is already not unimodule lattice. This is lattice unimodule, but this is lattice could be unimodule, but it embeds into this lattice. And embeds primitively, so primitively means one abelian group sits another free abelian group, but the quotient has no torsion. And so there's no vector here whose multiple gets here. Okay? And this could be anything, so this is just the rank of this. If your field is complex number. So for, because if field is not complex numbers, I can't even talk about this thing. Because it's not defined. What's cosmology of a variety, which is not defined over complex numbers. It's not complex manifold. It's not four manifold, right? You have to think something, right? And of course, this, your clever people knew what to do. And this is just the theory of Grothendieck of what's called Grothendieck topology on any algebraic variety. And I have to compute cosmology in this topology, I think. But this has meaning in over any field, because it's purely algebraic. It's just kind of algebraic cycles, and you put some kind of equivalence relation between algebraic cycles, which substitutes this topological relation, and makes this group. It exists in any characteristic. And you can always talk about its rank of this group. So if the field is a basic field, it's just complex numbers, it follows from Hodge theory, because all algebraic cycles are here. And so the maximum will be 20. Okay. The class of algebraic cycle, all this by Hodge theorem, or in fact, in this case, Lefschetz theorem, belongs to here, so just as most 20. But if the field is not complex numbers, this thing doesn't exist. There's no only Hodge decomposition of cosmology. And there is another possibility. So rho of x could be equal to 22. Is not equal. But not 21. Okay, then we'll see this thing really related to hyperbolic geometry. So it's related to classification of what's called reflective lattices in hyperbolic space. And they exist in all dimensions up to 22, with 21 omitted. Okay. And I think there is a conjecture that all these reflective lattices occur on K3 surfaces. And the reason why 21 is not there, because there are no K3 surfaces for which the rank of this group is equal to 21. Okay, it's always misses 21. Okay, so just so that this. So when we study this discrete groups in hyperbolic spaces, I will try to give you example how this discrete group acts on neuron sphere lattice or on this numerical lattice, either K3 surface or maybe abelian surface. Let me just start with example, because I wanted to do it. With abelian surface. And this is very nice. Because abelian surfaces are kind of easy. Okay, so let's take A abelian surface. But I take very special abelian surface. I take this abelian surface will be product of two elliptic groups. So what is the elliptic curve EM? It's elliptic curve with complex multiple relation. Complex one. By quadratic integers of quadratic field. So just take quadratic field Q and join minus M, imaginary quadratic field. Take field Q and adjoin the root M is positive number of M, and then just take the ring of integers in this algebraic number field. So this will be as a concept as a Z, it's just as a Z module, because this is contains, of course, like Z. As a Z module, this will be integers, this is just of rank 2. So you can think about it as a lattice. And you take your EM, take your C, and divide by this ring of integers in this field. Let me call maybe just or like O. Ring of integers in the field. I assume that M is square free. So is it okay? So this is your lattice. So the lattice happened to be just, of course, this is, as a lattice, is just Z2. And then it sits in this field in the complex numbers because it's imaginary field, right? So it's a quadratic extension of the field of rational numbers generated by square root of negative number. So it's kind of imaginary numbers, complex numbers in C. You consider this as a subgroup of C, of rank 2, right? And I'll take the factor space, the space of orbits, right? And this elliptic curve. And what's good about this elliptic curve, you can, taking any number from this ring, you multiply it by C, it's a complex number, right? But of course, multiplying by the lattice, it's also there, right? So it preserves the lattice. So it defines the endomorphism of this thing. So every, by every kind of algebraic integer, just multiplication by here by z of z is a map here. Not necessarily invertible, it's endomorphism, it's a map to itself. It's an isomorphism only in two cases, when m is equal to 1. And this is like Gaussian numbers. So it will be Gaussian integers. This will be just your integer z square root of r, right? Okay? Or it's Eisenstein numbers, when m is equal to 3. And this will be a ring of Eisenstein numbers. This will be, you take the third root of unity and then join to z. This is a quadratic extension of q. In this case, this is elliptic curve acquires automorphism. Just either multiplication by I, and like the torus becomes this kind of lattice has this fundamental domain. Or it's a endomorphism multiplication by cube root of unity, then the lattice becomes hexagon. So this is a two particular elliptic curves with additional complex multiplication. So this takes this algebraic variety, which is a product of the two elliptic curve of complex multiplication. Okay, and now let's take the following group. Let's consider the group SL2, the group of 2x2 matrices, whose entries happens to be integers in this quadratic extension. Okay, so just like we'll be A, B, C, D. But A, B, C, D will be just some complex numbers, but these complex numbers are taken to be algebraic integers in this field, right? For example, it could be like A plus B I, something like Gaussian integers, right? Here. Okay? So this will be a group. How does it act here? Obviously, so take this matrix, this elements of this group. Take two numbers. Of course, these are complex numbers. One in here, in this copy on the key, but of course, margin of this lattice, right? Okay, but I kind of define the action on C cross C. I define it, okay, by usually by the matrix, right? It just acts AZ1 plus AZ2, CZ1 plus BZ2. It has perfect sense, right? Because I can multiply complex number by this integer, right? Because I just said so, okay, just you multiply by integers. And this is okay because I just sends this lattice to itself, right? And so just as well-defined map of the orbit space, right, of this elliptic curve. So this is really endomorphism of, and also this matrix is invertible. So it becomes automorphism. So this is just really becomes really defined the mapping of the Morpheus group of the product of the elliptic curve. So this is kind of very interesting group. So the group of like SL2, whose entries are happens to be imaginary integers in quadratic extension. Okay, so you see how it acts on the Picard. So now we have a representation of this group in the orthogonal group of the Picard lattice. It's not faithful. So this group contains, of course, center. So if you take the matrix -1, -1, you'll see it just acts identically on this Picard lattice. And really, so I claim that just the Picard lattice is of rank 4 in this case. And this is the maximum possible for abelian surface. Because for abelian surface, the second Betti number for torus is equal to 6. And Hodge decomposition gives you H to 0, H 0 to is also 1. So H 1 1 is 4. So the maximal number of linear dependent algebraic cycles on algebraic torus could be 4. And this is kind of achieved in this example. How do you see the cycles? How do you see algebraic cycles on this product of two curves? Look, this is just, you can draw it like this, right? Right? It's just like XY coordinates, right? Because one cycle will be just this, right? Fiber one projection, right? Like horizontal curve, right? Another cycle will be, oh, no, the other, I'm drawing the different. Horizontal vertical curve, right? Okay, what will be extra? Give me one more cycle which doesn't come from vertical and horizontal. Obvious one. Diagonal, right? Okay, you can take a diagonal, right? In fact, it's always there. Forget about this M. You take the product of two elliptic curves, you have Picard number is 3 at least. Because there is a vertical class, horizontal class, and take the diagonal, and see the linear independent. But what else? What else? Because you take this endomorphism of this curve here by multiplying by and take its graph. And this gives you additional cocycle. Okay, you have to kind of do everything precisely. But basically, just as the Picard group, numerical lattice are generated by four elements. Vertical curve, horizontal curve, diagonal, which is always there. An additional fourth cycle, linear independent, comes from the graph of this endomorphism of the curve. Okay? So, but now you see, just if you look at this, how it acts on the vertical, on horizontal, and on the graph, it's really commutes with this -1. -1 doesn't change it. Okay, so -1 acts identically on the algebraic cycles. Okay, so you really have to replace it to PSL2. So really I go to PSL2 divided by center. And then I take this my representation. Okay? And now it's faithful. Now you see that in the orthogonal group of this lattice, which of course now sits in the isometry group of three-dimensional hyperbolic space, you embed it into this, so you realize this group PSL2OM, which sits in isometry in the group of motions of three-dimensional hyperbolic space, coming from algebraic geometry. So because you realize this action of this group. This is called the Bianchi group. And denoted like by M. And this is a Bianchi arithmetical group, which sits realized as an isometry of three-dimensional hyperbolic space. So remember last time we were talking, and this is what I'll start talking today, about reflection groups, because many groups you see explicitly a group of motions by composing the reflections with respect to hyperplane. So you may ask, what's the reflection part of this group? So every group, if you have any group, you can always consider the maximal subgroup which are generated by reflections. For any group of motions in hyperbolic space, collect all reflections in this group and take the subgroup generated by reflections. And you may ask, let's say the group is reflective. If gamma reflective is a finite index, if the index of gamma reflection is fine. Okay? So just for any group, discrete group of motions of hyperbolic space, you might try to classify all discrete groups which are reflective, so which contain reflective group as a. So what does it mean? It means if you take the fundamental, so fundamental domain for this reflection group, and then just a group gamma has a fundamental domain inside of this reflection group, which is a finite volume. So this is just the rule. For example, you may take the whole orthogonal group of a lattice. You take put integral structural hyperbolic space, consider there's this kind of coming from the lattice, take orthogonal group of this hyperbolic lattice, and I say if this is reflective, then M is called a reflective lattice. So this is just a, there's no classification of this reflective lattice, but it's known. So M is a reflective lattice of hyperbolic type of signature. Then N is a at most 19. Or N is equal to 81. So this theorem belongs to Esselman, yeah. I think he wrote only one paper. This was his thesis, I think, and that's it. So, I mean, this is what I told you just. This is, should be compared with this fact that just a Picard number. Rho of a K3 surface of a field of any characteristic is in the same range. It's just a rho between 20 or rho is equal to 22. But of course, this is just 1n, right? 1% is rho, right? Okay, so just completely, you see the pattern.
A question about the Bianchi groups case. In that case, is the ample cone, the whole forward left cone?
Yeah, okay, that's right. I'll come back to this, yeah. Just I haven't finished to say when Bianchi group is reflective. That's right. So just so you see, of course, rho is just signature, of course. Just like signature of Picard lattice or numeric is 1 rho minus 1. Right? So it's completely agreed, completely. So nobody knows why. Of course, not every lattice is realized as a Picard lattice because, look, if you take your M and change the quadratic form, so we have this operation.
Is it unimodular or does it matter?
No, of course not. It doesn't matter. Unimodular?
Oh, yeah, we don't want that.
Yeah. And here just then.
They're not.
So you can always twist lattice. Just what this notation means is just you take the quadratic form and multiply all values by k, by an integer. Just put the integer before your quadratic form, right? Multiply the matrix or symmetric form by integer, right? And of course, all this reflection group doesn't change because it's the same matrix, really, I think, yeah? But in Picard lattice, you won't be able to realize this lattice if you multiply it by very often by k, there's a kind of abstraction. You won't be able to realize it as a lattice, this lattice as a numerical lattice of k3 surface. So you have to consider it up to homotopy. So the conjecture still open is the kind of homotopy class of any reflection. You can also make it even by multiplying like by 2. These are isomorphic to the for some key percent. So it's known that for this exceptional case, so the rank 22, There's only one such reflexive lattice. This also was proven by Esselman. And this lattice is realized on K3 surface in characteristic 2. So there's like the case, the maximum case is realized. So just if just n is equal to 19. So there are two lattices, and both of them are real. And they're all. So one of these lattices is just u plus d16, d18, no, d22, d20. So that means you take hyperbolic plane and take again the lattice, which is just really corresponds to Dynkin diagram of type D in this theory of simple groups. This is rank 20. This is Picard lattice. X, what's called super singular K3, Artin invariant 1 over field characteristic 2. Okay, so you can really see it in positive characteristic. And there's other lattice, which you also see. Okay, so let's go back to this Bianchi group. So Bianchi groups are always a finite volume in the orthogonal group. And this is a immediate follows from algebraic geometry. So there's the claim that this discrete group, Bianchi group, so this is a sits of this orthogonal group of finite units. So this is a finite volume. So the Bianchi group is a discrete reflection group, so it's always a finite volume. And the proof is elementary if you know algebraic geometry. So, and I think I need to remind this kind of thing. So the basic thing, what the basic tool in algebraic geometry for the study of topomorphic group of K3 surfaces and also abelian surfaces, it was called Torelli, or global Torelli. Let me just say one. This is one of the most really, like in my long life as a mathematician, I still view this as the kind of the most beautiful and the most, and the deepest result of mathematics, I think, in this century. And also, one reason why I think so, because it's also due to my thesis advisor. It was Igor Shafarevich and Pitetsky Shapiro. So this was conjectured by Andre Weil. Completely spectacular conjecture, because of. So this is all based on the following thing. If you take elliptic curve, which is given by like fundamental Polyhedron, power diagram, like the C monthly lattice. So you can reconstruct the complex structure knowing the periods. If there are elliptic curves are one integral, one holomorphic form. Like if you write an elliptic curve in this equation, large structure equation. So this will be like dx over y. And this is kind of unique holomorphic form on my torus, okay, holomorphic form, because all your cogmology, Hodge structure will be H1,0 plus H0,1. When this form is complex conjugate, this generates H1. You integrate along the periods, because this is your lattice. And this is kind of generators in H1. And you take these two numbers. Consider this vector. This is called the period of your elliptic curve. And the theorem, just very simple theorem, because as soon as you know this number, you will be able to find what's this lattice. It's kind of trivial. So kind of moral, you will be able to reconstruct a complex structure on this torus by knowing the integrals of your holomorphic form along the generators of the homology group. Okay. So Andre Weil conjectured the same thing for any abelian variety, and this was for any K3 surface. This can be generalized to any abelian varieties and was done by Frobenius and Riemann in the 19th century. But Weil conjecture was, you can do the same thing for K3 surface. So K3 surface, of course, has also one form. But now your second Betti number is 22, so you have to integrate it along the 22 vector. this is called the period. So you just take your basis in the second homology group. You have holomorphic two form this time. For elliptic curve, it's one form. You integrate this form along this cycles, and you get some vector in the 22-dimensional space. But of course, this is vector only up to proportionality, the same as here. If you multiply this form by scalar, you get proportion vector. So just you have to go to really projective space. There's also some obvious condition. If you take the form, this is form 2,0, it has like 2 dz1, dz2. But if HF itself, you have too many holomorphic coordinates, it must be 0. Okay? And this is kind of translated into the fact that this is not just any vector, but it belongs to satisfies some quadratic equation. So it belongs to quadric here in this space. There's this condition. There's another obvious condition. Take this form and wedge it with a complex conjugate. This was form was of type H to 0. Another form was dz bar, dz2 bar. If you wedge, of course, you have volume form. So if you choose that property, this is just the volume form. So if you integrate, this is transfer, so just this kind of vector must be kind of positive. And so it picks up with some kind of open subset in this quadric. Okay, which corresponds to kind of inequality. So one just will be equality. Another condition will be inequality. And this gives you open subset. And this is what's called period space. There's another ambiguity here because this vector certainly depends on the choice of a basis. Right? So if you change the base, of course, your vector will change. Right? But you know how it will change because it will be transformed by some transformation, G, and kind of GLM of this H2 of homology doesn't matter. This is Poincaré, which is Z22. But of course, this is homology also preserves your inner product, so it's really orthogonal group of this H. So somehow you have to divide this thing just if you want to kind of write definition by kind of all such transformations you get by changing the basis by Gauss. Still, it's not quite good because this space has no good structure in algebraic geometry because this is now 20 dimension. This is 21, this is 20, and you divide it, get some 20 dimensional space. But usually, you consider the K3 surface with some embedded into projective space. So just you can fix a vector H, which is a class of hyperplane sections. And then if you integrate along this H, you'll get zero. Because a curve has one complex coordinate, right, locally, dz. And you integrate in the form, it has two complex coordinates. Like you integrate in form something like locally dz1, dz2, right? When you restrict this form to the curve, this must be linear dependent. And so the integral must be zero, okay? So like somehow you have to kind of cut this hyperplane by some quadric by hyperplane. So you really go to 20 dimensional space because this gives you a condition. You get now quadric in 20 dimensional space. This will be 90 dimensional space. And now everything becomes really beautiful. So this kind of quotient becomes algebraic variety, and this is really kind of marginal space of K3 surfaces with degree with kind of this fixed class of hyperplane sections. Again, I'm trying to say something very, very profound, really, just in 5 minutes, of course. This is not good, I think, but I think this is the idea. And the global Taylorian theorem says then it's now you can reconstruct the complex structure of K3 surface by the image of this vector in the space. Okay, so you can't really imagine what kind of theorems. There's no uniformization. Like for elliptic curves, it's easy because elliptic surface is a quotient of vector space by a lattice, right? K3 surface is simply connected. You see, there is no such thing like passing to linear algebra, right? So it's a very, 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 very deep theorem. Okay, it's one of the deepest results in mathematics, I think. And then and the proof is never been easy, I think. So even there are many proofs now after original proof of Shafarevich and Pitevsky Shapiro, but all proofs are non-trivial proofs because it's very non-trivial fact. So there is a, the way it's kind of, you derive the corollary for, from this global Torelli theorem, it really tells you the following thing. So suppose I have isometry in this group. And suppose we have the whole group gamma.
But is this really, I mean, I'm kind of surprised, is this really going to be about Torelli theorem for K3s or about for Abelian surfaces?
Well, Abelian surfaces are the same.
Okay.
Because Abelian surfaces, you also do with H2 cosmology, do absolutely the same, only there will be six variables.
Yeah, but it won't be such a deep thing.
Yeah, for Abelian surfaces, you can do the same trick like for elliptic curve. Okay? For Abelian surfaces, it's not difficult. In fact, part of this thing is used in the proof of the. So when you original proof of this global Torelli just checks this theorem for some subclass of K3 surfaces which come from Abelian surfaces. They're called Kummer surfaces, which I discussed last time. And then some kind of deduced from this the result for any K3 surface. Suppose we have subgroup of numerics of this Picard numerical lattice. Okay. And suppose for every G in gamma and any curve, say C on X, the class of this curve becomes the class of some other curve. I mean, just this kind of preserves curves, because this is just abstract. This is just a transformation of cosmology classes. So just you take cosmology class of a curve, apply your isometry, some cosmology class, why should be cosmology class of a curve? But suppose your G has this property. So then there exists a subgroup of finite index in gamma, such as gamma prime comes from automorphic group. So any G in gamma prime is just any bad notation. Maybe I call it here sigma. So sigma will be G star, but G belongs to automorphism. Because it's really this what this Torelli theorem is, I think. Somehow it tells you just from some. Okay, I don't think I will explain it, but this falls from this theorem. It just first corollary, this theorem is very easy. Okay, so just so if I take some group of the orthogonal group, which preserves what we call cone of effective cycles of curves, okay, then there will be a subgroup of finite index in this group, which you can extend it to the transformation of the whole cosmology group of the K3 surface, and using Torelli theorem, you see this comes from isomorphism, comes from orthomorphic group. So what's this kind of condition that preserves curve? So for Abelian surface, there's no condition. So this is kind of fair. If X Abelian surface, and you do the same Torelli theorem, no condition. So every isometry of an algebraic cycle sends algebraic cycle to algebraic cycle. Because just you're really preserving also polarization. So just so, and this follows from the fact, that Abelian surface has no smooth Russian curve. No. No Russian. And somehow the criteria on this thing just must be like that there's a curve intersect this curve. Because, yeah. So for Abelian surfaces, it's not a problem. So every kind of subgroup of orthogonal group up to finite index realized by isomorphism. And so this all this Bianchi group is always realized by up to finite index. It's a finite index in the whole orthogonal group. But I think reflective part of this group could be finite index or infinite index. And I think result is the following. If M is less than what is the derivative? If M is a, if M is a less than 19, I am not equal to 14 or 17. So this Bianchi group.
Wait, how did you end up showing that the Bianchi group was a finite index?
Because there's no condition like this. There's no NF, there's no Kolmogorov, there are no reflection groups. Okay, maybe just I'll state exactly this fact. Okay, let me just state this. Okay, so, yeah, because I think I'll need it. Okay, let's do this again. Let X will be K3 or abelian zero. Or abelian zero. So it takes this orthogonal group of the algebraic cycle. Okay. Inside of this group, it's called the reflection of the Weyl group. So this will be generated by reflections S alpha. This will be just the alpha square is equal to is a class of CP1, like CP1, CP can be serious. So it automatically follows that just the alpha is equal to minus 2. If you have a CP1 sitting in a K3 surface or abelian surface, there's a kind of formal how to compute the self-intersection using the genus of your curve. And just it tells you the self-intersection in this class of cohomology is equal to minus 2. So it will be reflection to minus 2 there. So the, it follows from the global tangent theorem. Implies that first of all, this line group is a normal subgroup inside of the generated by automorphism group. And this image of the Morpheus group in there. Here, remember, I noted by August. And just this is just, and this is group, this finite index in the orthogonal group.
Probably times the
harmonics. Yeah. And this is finite index. Okay, this is the theorem. This is the Kolmogorov group, which we'll be using. So this means really just my group sits here. Contains this kind of bigger group. Same derivative problem. And this sits here. And this group of finite index. So, for example, this group is trivial. On abelian surface, there is no map of CP1 to the torus. If you take the torus, it's the map only to the constant. Clear, right? This is just a theorem from topology, because if you have a map of continuous map of two manifolds, right, you can pass it to universal cover, right? This is simply connected, CP1, and universal cover C2. So then you extend this map to the map of compact sphere, right? To the space contracted on C2, right? There's no such map except constant maps, right? So the map must be to the point. So there are no rational curves sitting on abelian surface. And so there is no, this group becomes trivial. And so your automorphous group is a finite index here. So every kind of group will be realized as an octofinite index as an automorphous finite group. But in any case, this is a fact. The Bianchi group is always a finite volume, I think, in the, inside of this orthogonal. But they are not necessarily reflective, so they're only reflective for this M at most 14, I think. I think this is a very recent result of Bill Lipovs, I think some Russian guy, I think. This is the example, I think this is the only example of group of matrices arithmetical discrete group, something with, but not over integers somehow. It's the matrices are taking algebraic numbers, and they can interpret it as a group of automorphism of a abelian surface. Okay, so I wanted to really, so last time we considered this as a universal Coxeter groups. Remember this one was first example how these groups are. Remember this is just group of free group. It's generated by reflections of just n elements. And there are no relations. But the only relation square is one, nothing else. So this defining relation will be just every element is a finite order. So it's a free product of n elements of order 2. And remember how we realized that for some n, not n less than 16, we realized this in the following way. We take the x, which was quartic surface. N nodes, N kind of conical singularity. And so what we do just we take some of these nodes, so this will be like a V1 PN, right? What we do just we take this point and project so that my surface sits in P3. It's given by one equation. So my surface is given by one equation of degree 4. Like X, Y, Z, W. Take a point, and of course there's a map which projects from P3 to P2, right? And clear, right? Just projection, right? Of course it's not defined, that's why I put it kind of dotted line arrow, because if so projection, so this so it's center of projection is PI. It's not defined at PI, I don't know where your point PI goes. But the trick is very easy for that, just what you do, just you kind of blow up this point. Just then you blow, replace this point by P2. And just this is P2 kind of classifies all directions of your lines coming through this point, right? Because all directions now will be just line passing through the point and just P2, right? In fact, they will be identified with this P2. Because this will be like where this line goes, right? Okay, this will be my P2, right? And inside of this thing, just so X just has a quadratic singularity, you consider all lines which are tangent to my X, which intersect my X at this point of multiplicity at least 3. Because it passes through a single point, multiplicity at least 2. But if I additionally assume that my line is a tangent at this point to the kind of to the cone somehow, then just this will be just all such direction will be just like tangent cone of the K3 surface. In fact, you can write down the equation of K3 of this surface like this. Pick up this point like PI, you've got it like 1, 0, 0, 0. And write down your equation of degree 4 by this equation, like x squared, say then there will be some x, y, z, w, and this will be equation of degree 2, right? Plus like x equation of degree 3 and equation of degree 4. But now in theory. And so this is just exactly my cone, of enveloping cone of my surface. So just all these lines with direction y, z, w, which satisfy this equation, they intersect my quartic surface at this point of multiplicity, not 2, but 3. Okay? And then just in this, if you're projecting to this plane of constants y, z, w, so this is a conic. So inside of this will be conic. And this is corresponds to enveloping cone. And this is kind of very simple geometry which we study in any book on differential geometry in enveloping cone. And this one watches you when you just take the preimage of X here, so it will consist of a what's called proper preimage X plus this conic. So just so if you do this kind of here, and this is blow up of your K3 surface at this point. So just preimage will be just the fiber over this point, so just this will be the fiber There will be this conic. But of course, conic is just CP1. When you do it for all these points, so this is non-singular variety, so obtained by blowing up nodes on your quartic surface. And self-intersection of this curve, so call this curve Ri, the class of self-intersection, is equal to minus 2. It's always for smooth curve on K3 surface, it's always cup product itself is equal to minus 2. So now we have, on your surface, we have n such curves. So I have like R1, how many nodes? Whose class is like R1? Is equal to minus 2. You have, of course, one more cycle. Take hyperplane section, which away from this point. It will be kind of H, hyperplane section, and class H satisfies H, H is equal to 4. Because it's degree of your surface. If you take hyperplane section and cut the fish itself, it's just your intersecting line with your surface and intersects at 4 points. Okay. So now you have this sublattice generated. So it now takes the sublattice M generated by this classes or this curves. Sometimes we call them nodal curves. Plus class H. Okay. And then this, remember, now we realize this reflection group. So take these reflections, S, R, I. And last time I just, you see how it acts. So it acts on, kind of, it preserves the lattice, R, I, plus Z, H. And H identical orthogonal complement. And the matrix, we just last time we just I gave you the matrix of this transformation. So without proof, I think. But the matrix was like this. This will be in this basis R, I, and H, the matrix was like this. It's very easy, I think, just to find this matrix. If you look, and remember what this reflection did. The reflection, just when you project from this point, you take the take a point and project. And then just 2 points projected in this, to the same point in the plane. Because this line intersects your quartic at 4 points. Here we multiplicity 2, right? And here we say multiplicity 1. So just to say this is x, and this is t. But that's, of course, these points coincide. This map is not quite defined because you don't know what's the image of this singular point, right? But if you extend this map to blow up, you see this is perfectly defined. In fact, there's a general theorem in the theory of minimal borders of algebraic surfaces. Any map which is maybe not everywhere defined, but defined on Zariski open subset, can be extended to automorphism if your surface of a Kadaira dimension non-zero and non-singular. So just every birational map of K3 surface extends to biregular automorphism. So it's kind of automatical. But in this way, you can see very explicitly how you do it. And last time I told you, just if you compute how this automorphism acts on the class of the line, and just you see that this is a matrix. So now you have like in every plane, your reflection acts at this matrix and just on a complement it acts as a density matrix. And you see this matrix don't commute. In fact, if you take the R as like S R I, there's no relation in R R G. It's kind of just for the infinity. So just with this, how your universal group. So now you see that this is just the embedding of universal Coxeter group embeds into automorphic group for this longer X. So you can also here we just give this example and
take a break. Yeah.
Just one more, just because I want to finish with this thing. So just so one, I think I don't know any realization of, so this I remember at most 16. So the question, so is this such realization possible? I did for K3 series, for 1 year. Not such realization, every realization. Because that's just, is there any homomorphism of the universal Coxeter group into automorphic group of our K3 surface, that the rank of this Coxeter group is larger than 16. Like, I don't know, because I don't know this construction. There's one construction for completely different construction, and this way, for n equal to 3.
Let me back up and make sure I got the 16 thing. So if you have a quartic surface with at most 16 nodes.
Yeah, this has at most 16 nodes.
Then you can take one symmetry for each node, and they generate some group automorphisms. So under what circumstances do we know that they generate the whole automorphism group?
No, they're just, sometimes for small n. In general, if you assume that you see, this is kind of sublattice. You have to take assume that your. No, that's okay. I think so. You can kind of if it's not the whole N1, because it could be other cycles.
What was Kondo's theorem on the generic Coomer, the Coomer surface?
So, but this is like, okay. So for generic Coomer, just up to finite. So this is just rank 17. It will be like N is equal to 16, and so this is rank 17, and generic Coomer has rank 17. But the group is much bigger. This is very small part of this group. And some other automorphisms also generate infinite group, some group. So the group is just some part. It's just part that's called projections. Okay, so there's one nice example for N equal to 3, the realization of this universal Coxeter group, and that's also nice. So what you do, just you take and then you take the product of three P1s, obviously CP1s, right? Okay. So how I define some variety of this product of CP1? So I take a form by homogeneous form, like take will be cardinals here, like you know what is this, okay. So just sort of, this is just, so it would be F, like X, Y. I write down the zero, I want to define what is the sub-variety of this thing, okay? So how I, like in one projective space, take homogeneous equation, right? But now just I have three copies of projective space, right? So how I should divide algebraic sub-variety? I take an algebraic equation which consists of like three pairs of cardinals. This will project the cardinals here, like U0, U1. This will be like V0, V1. Each will be projective cardinals here. And here will be W0, W1. Okay. And then I assume this will be algebraic equation. This will be just algebraic polynomial in six variables. U0, U1, V0, U1, V0, U1. But it will be homogeneous of the same degree in each pair of variables. Then I can say what is zero, because point here is defined by two numbers up to proportionality, right? If I don't do that, I don't know how to evaluate to say what's my polynomial vanishes at the point. But if I make polynomial homogeneous with each group of variables, then it's perfectly clear what does it mean a set of zeros, right? Okay, and then I say the set of zeros will be algebraic sub-variety of this product, right? Of course, I can do it with any number of copies of projective space. Of course, if I can do several equations, and this was the system of the multi-homogeneous equations of, like this will be of some degrees D1 in this variables, D2 in this variables, D3 in this variable. So as soon as I have this kind of sub-variety, and there's a certain condition this polynomial is non-singular, because I want smooth sub-variety, I will be able to compute canonical class. And how I compute canonical class in terms of cohomology? What's cohomology here? So what's H2 of this variety. What's H2 of this product of three copies of P1? In fact, on X. And so there is a theorem, if you have only one equation in this product of P1, that H2 will be the same as H2 here. Like every class of H2 restricted to X gives you class in X, and every H2 class on X comes in this way. What's H2? There is a Kunit formula, right? So you have product of manifolds, you compute, like H2 will be just of rank 3, right? Because what will be class of H? You take a projection to P1 and take preimage of this point, and it will be one two-dimensional cycle. Then take projection to this factor, get another, and this kind of generated by H1, H2. So Picard lattice for my X will be the same. Just this will be kind of, you project X to P1, and take preimage of the point, it will be one class, preimage of P2, and this class. And then you compute the canonical class in terms of this. And the formula is very simple. This will be minus 2 plus D1 plus minus 2 plus D2 H1 plus minus 2 plus D3 H3. Okay. So this is kind of part of standard techniques in algebraic geometry. It's called adjunction formula. So if you want this to be K3 surface, you have to make D1 is equal to D2 is equal to 2. Okay? And so the moral just, this is kind of, we give you examples of K3 surfaces. Take three products of P1s, take any bi-homogeneous forms of degree 2, 2, 2. Okay? And again, make it kind of non-singular and take the set of zeros in the product of two P1s, right? And this is K3 surface. This is K3 surface. And Picard number, generically, it could be more. In fact, I'll give you an example when it's more. But you expect that Picard number, generically, just nothing else. It's 3. It could be some other cycles coming from, not necessarily from, not coming from product of projected space, but just the Picard number could be 3. But now, how I realize this group UC3 here? Look, let's see what happens if I project this surface to the first, for example, two factors, P1 plus P1. So what will be the final? Look, this is my equation, and it's degree 2 in every variable, right? In every pair of variables, right? I take a point here, so it means I give the value to, say, 2u0, u1, like alpha, beta, right? Give the value here too, right? And see what will be restrained for this pair, right? But this is equation of degree 2 in this and this and this, right? And you kind of gave a values to this, this will be polynomial of degree 2 in this, right? So it means over each point here will be two points here, two solutions of this equation of degree 2, right? So that will be just the map of degree 2 to 1, right? That clear? Because when you fix these first two factors, will be equation of degree 2 in every pair of variables. It will be just one homogeneous equation on W, W1. Coefficients will depend on these points, of course. Right? So there will be two solutions, maybe one solution when they include, when they coincide. Right? It's easy to divide, to see that. So you see now you have three maps from this. Of course, you can also do it restricted as projected waves. We do it restricted. So you have three covers. But again, in the complex geometry and topology, we know what to do if you have a cover of spaces of degree 2. It's a deck transformation, right? So like preimage of each point is two points, right? Switch them, right? Or just take one point and then send it to another point, right? It's like Galois map. Galois, this is Galois cover of degree 2. And this is just deck transformation. So you now you've got three automorphisms of order 2. You come to this projection. So you have three projections. And it's easy to check. This is map, but on K3, if it's smooth on K3 surface, every rational map is biregular automatically because it's minimal model. But in fact, this map is just, it's a, could be not rational because you see sometimes the, if Picard is 3, that's okay. There's no indeterminacy points. But if Picard is larger, what may happen, the fiber, it's identical equation in WW1. See, imagine that when you plug in u0 and u1 in v0 u1, some special value such as your quadratic equation becomes identical to 0. Then the fiber is the whole p1. Okay, then you don't know what's your vector transformation, right? Because you don't know which point you set it, right? Okay, so this is only birational map. But we're kind of good in algebraic geometry because on K3 surface, a remarkable thing, every birational map extends to biregular map. On any surface of Kadaira, minimal surface of Kadaira dimension greater than 0, every the group of birational automorphism is equal to the group of automorphism. If it's minimal and the Kadaira dimension is, it's not a root surface. So it's always automorphic. It's always automorphic. Though just, it's not kind of immediately clear. Okay, so now the claim, just what you see, this is just exactly, there are no relations here. There are no relations, so there will be no relation. This is just UC3. So if you take the product of any two elements, this will be for infinite. In fact, you see easily, again, this is a nice exercise. You see how this group acts on this basis. And it acts by this kind of matrices, like, for example, if you take this projection, I think it's 0, 0, 0, 1. Maybe like the G12 projection, G13, and G23, right? It's called G12. Because there are three projections because you choose two factors or three. And so every time you get this matrix, like it's the other matrix will be just switching the call. And you just take the product of the matrix and see this of infinite order matrix. Okay? And so there's three relations. And so this is just, and this is completely unrelated. You have, of course, one K3 surface with three nodes. Picard number 4, I think you realize. But this is just group UC3, which is otherwise, it's really a hyperbolic plane, this group. And just if you look at the, what's the corresponding reflection, just ideal triangle. This is your hyperbolic plane. And this is your fundamental domain. Ideal triangle on the three vertices of the absolute. And you see, this is like ideal, again, it's moral, I think, yes. You see this? Yes. Google ideal triangle and gives you very beautiful pictures of ideal triangle on hyperbolic plane. And for algebraic geometers, I look at ideal triangle, and of course, I immediately see this K3 surface, right? And see there's a reflection group of this ideal triangle. For me, just this group of automorphs of this K3 surface. Or three-nodal, renodal coordinate. Okay, so just so let me just say what I say in the second half. I really go back again to UCN, and then I do this here, explain this with Apollonian Guskins. Because now, what I said in my colloquium talk, you want to look at the limit set of your group. So this is the important thing. If you take discrete group acting hyperbolic space, you see how it acts on an absolute, on the boundary of a hyperbolic space. And I have this kind of set of points of discontinuity. And the Hausdorff dimension of the set plays important role in geometry, of course, of hyperbolic space and the dynamics. But it also turns out can be plays very interesting role in algebraic geometry. And we'll be able to see explicitly that just like, for example, this Apollonian Guskins is nothing more just you take this universal Coxeter group and look at this limit set. And the limit set lies in the sphere, right? Kind of if this is like H3, so inside of the sphere, three-dimensional sphere. So the sphere will be two-dimensional. This is ball, three-dimensional. So then you look at the limit set, this is some kind of set on S2. But S2 is just like a Euclidean plane. And you see just like in the case of universal Coxeter group, this limit set is very beautiful. This is Apollonian Guskin. It consists of kind of circles, which everywhere they allow only to touch. And this kind of field, big circle, kind of densely, this like fractal set. And this is the limit set of the universal Coxeter group. And so as you see that universal Coxeter group are realized in algebraic geometry. So this gives you an example of a K3 surface, for example, with now, like if you take the three-dimensional hyperbolic space, this is H3. So for example, take four nodal quartic surface, realize this UC4 as automorphous group of this quartic surface by projections from these nodes. And you see the limit set will be a Polonian cascade of this every weight agent. So, okay, so.
So we'll resume in 5-10 minutes.
Maybe I said something. Maybe you're right. Maybe I said something wrong. Gaskets. Not for multi-rate jumping. Okay, so wait to see how this limit set looks like. So we take the reflection group. So remember what's reflection group. So you take start from there. Vectors. For some reason, I will go to HN plus 1 because I want to see this sphere packing in the n-dimensional space. So you take n unit vectors, like vi is equal to minus 1. Remember, we have this signature 1. Okay. And I take hyper plane. We call kind of vectors x. So this is like your kind of hyperplane comes with two half spaces. This will be like, this space will be h a plus, and this is space h minus. So this is zero. And then you take the polytope, which is intersection of like interiors. And this is like the Coxton. So this, because Coxton polytope means reflection group generated by these vectors. Exhaust groups, a discrete group of motions of my space. So this gives you kind of conditions on the angle. So just it means that your EI J must be cosine. Or the divergence of EI J greater than 1. So this is my group. So this is my group, so I call gamma P, generated by reflections with respect to the faces of this polytope. And I want to see what's the limit set of this group on the. So this is like hyperplane lattice. Again, always keep in mind that's two-dimensional picture. So, because two-dimensional picture, this is my hyperplanes. So some of them I may intersect, but some of them may not. Right. And of course, I look at this restriction of hyperplanes in the hyperbolic space. Of course, they belong to the projective space, but so like my polytope will be just this kind of things which sits inside. And this is triangle. This angle must be pi over mij. And there's no condition here, because this means this is a divergent. This is divergent. So this is kind of polyhedron. So this polyhedron is not a finite covolume because of these things. But if it would be all angles, all vertices inside, this will be even compact polyhedron. Okay. And then take the reflection groups generated by reflections into this side. Okay. So what do they cut out on the boundary? This is my boundary of hyperbolic plane. Of course, in this case, I just cut out points. Okay, but if I go to already to H3, I have to draw a two-dimensional ball, and this is just sphere. And I do the same kind of thing, but now my three-dimensional polytope, right? And of course, the traces on the sphere will be bigger, will be like one-dimensional, right? And who they are? So remember, S2 can be really mapped to this kind of boundary of the three-dimensional ball, can be mapped to think as an extended Euclidean plane by projecting from stereographic projection, right? From the, say, upper northern ball, right? So then just my hyperplane intersects as S2 along something which goes here to, in this case, to circles. In fact, you can do it really very explicitly. Let's give a map from like to from Pn of R to Pn of S1. This is where my hyperbolic space is. In fact, this will become Russian map. Such that the image will be quadric. And the quadric, which is given by this equation, like x0, x0 squared, minus x1 squared, minus x1 is equal to 0. This will be the boundary of my absolute of my hyperbolic space. Remember, this is hyperbolic space where it dehomogenizes and becomes a ball, right? Becomes like y squared plus y squared less than 1, right? But this is a boundary in this hyperbolic space. Of course, this is a map which is very well known to algebraic geometers. So every map from can define for any field from Pn to Pn plus 1, and this is, of course, also very well known from usual geometers, like for the, and the preimage of this hyperplane will be circle. So it will be kind of map such as preimage of hyperplane is a quadric here. But very special quadric is a circle. Like, for example, when n is equal to 2, it must be circles which just really has 2 points at infinity aligned with I minus I. Right? Okay, so this was what's a circle. So circle in algebraic geometry is a conic in projective plane, but you fix a line at infinity just in consider all this conic passing through 2 points, right? Because this one will be circle over reals, right? For example, right? If you homogenize, you put here this equation, right? And then, of course, take z is equal to 0, and there will be two Capri's conjugate points on the infinity. Yeah. Circle or sphere in algebraic geometry is just a quadric, which is a, also comes with a fixing a hyperplane in projective space, and fixing a quadric there, which like equal to sum of the squares. So I fix a hyperplane. Say, for example, choose corners, fix hyperplane x0, or say y is equal to 0. And inside of this, fix the quadric, which doesn't have points, because this conic doesn't have real points, right? So like y squared plus y and square is equal to 0. This kind of sphere at infinity, right? And now trying to give a map by quadrics, which all passes through this quadric of small dimension. Like this will be map given by all conics which pass through these 2 points, right? And the formula is very explicit. Just the formula, just you just take. In fact, let me just, for the convenience, let me just change a little coordinates, I think, just. So I'll change this coordinate score. So just let me write it down quadric just in this way. It will be easier to do. Oh, this is remember it in H n plus 1. N plus 2 coordinates. Okay. Okay, it's clear this is the same quadric, the same equation, right? You choose the coordinate like x0 minus x1 times x0 plus x1. Transform to this equation, right? It's the same, but it's easy to write the form. So let's write down the formula. So let's consider all quadratic forms which pass through, if you plug in y is equal to 0, then it must contain this, right? So what will be the quadratic form? So just you just take the map will be just this, y0, yn, I go from bn, and okay, what's I give you this forms, like for example, look, this quadratic form, 2y0, right? Certainly vanishes here, vanishes automatically here, right? And this will be minus 2y0 x y1, minus 2y0 y2, goes to y0. Yn, and take some y square. Okay, look at all these quadrics which I wrote happen to pass through this smaller quadric, right? Smaller, because y0 vanishes, it already contains this hyperplane, right? Okay, and this one will contain this equation, right? Okay, so it's again, this is very similar map. Just this is just a map which is like in the two-dimensional space, you just you take two points on the line, right? Blow up these two points and blow down this proper threshold of this point. And you go to the quadric in P3, right? This is what I wrote in general, right? In the general, right? And you see now this cognizance satisfies this equation. Do this, multiply it as you see this, will be this equation, right? Okay, so the image will be this quadrant. So the image will be this quadrant. So it's a really very remarkable thing, I think, just this is just kind of the foundation of the what's called Planley Erlangen program of geometry. So you see, so now every automorphism of projective space which preserves this quadrant defines a birational map of this projective space, right? Okay. And you see just a kind of your, for example, reflections in this projected space corresponds to inversions here. So inversion with respect to spheres, with respect to the spheres, like inversive transformation. So this is kind of relates orthogonal geometry in projected space with inversive geometry in the projected space, one dimensional, smaller. This is just very classical geometry. Okay, but now you see what's now... What will be happens with hyperplane? Take a hyperplane. Take a vector E, just has coordinates like A0, AM plus 1. And take this hyperplane HE. And because of this quadratic form, this has the following equation. E0, TM plus 1. So take this AMN plus 1, T0. Plus sum of AI, or sorry, what? So X0. AI, X0. So just write it hyperplane, it's a linear combination of your coordinates, right, in my space. Okay. And so this is exactly all vectors which are perpendicular to this vector E with respect to this quadratic form. Quadratic form, the matrix of this symmetric form will be just like here will be 1, 0 will be 1. Okay, so just what explicitly just so now let's see what's the preview to this hyperplane until this map. This is my map, right? Just plug in your coordinates, right? And see what will be thinking. And we'll see the equation of the sphere and not only see it. Okay, that's okay. You leave it to me. Just here, trust me, right?
Yeah.
So this is the formula, just you plug in, right? And you see this, you get this transformation will be like A0 sum XI. Zero minus I A zero square is equal to A. Oh, I have to put here to A zero A plus one plus some A square. Okay, what is this? So this is a sphere, right? So if you kind of, so also, because this is a norm of the sphere, this is the Q of my E, right? This is my quadratic form, okay? So this is equal to 1, okay? So if I 0 is not equal to 0, right? You divide it by 0, then this becomes sphere. This is its center, right? This coordinates, right? Like AY over A0. But just A0 becomes a 1 over radius square, right? A0 becomes 1 over radius square, right? You divide by A0, you get like 1 over A0, right? It's exactly the equation of a sphere with center, right, of radius equal 1 over 0. So for this reason, I0 is called the curvature, or curvature square. So you see, you can interpret these coefficients of this first coefficients of this equation, this hyperplane, as a curvature of the sphere. Right? Curvature is just 1 over radius. Right? And so just 1 over radius squared is exactly your coefficients A0 in this hyperplane. Right? So of course, some hyperplanes are special. When A0 is equal to 0, then it becomes the reducible. And then just this is becomes really just a union of just hyperplane, this like sphere at infinity. Because hyperplane is also considered as a sphere of an infinite curvature, of the curvature, of infinite radius, of curvature zero, right? Curvature zero. You see, this is really very explicit. So just you see now, so every hyperplane, every side of your Coxeter polytope defined in this space, and this exactly mapped to the absolute. This is becomes my delta H. And so just the preimage of this hyperplane traces on this boundary of this hyperbolic space exactly sphere. This is really completely explicit, this particular sphere, this particular sphere. Okay? So there is a theorem. So take the Gram matrix of this. This point. So just put this intersection again. Take an inverse of this. Right? Okay, this is the Gram matrix. Take inverse. This will be like the matrix of GIG. Okay? And so consider this kind of the matrix, scalar matrix. We put here just like a 1 over square root of G11. We assume that all of them are non-zero. But this will be n plus 1. N plus 2 right there. I have N plus 2 vectors, right? In my polytope. So I take N plus 2 vectors. Right? This kind of, you take the principal minus of this matrix, and this is just inverse of this matrix. I take square root of it. Okay. And take this matrix, G P tilde, which will be this P. G. Oh, P is not good. M. So N. G. P. M. Okay, what I'm doing is just kind of normalization thing. You multiply in this matrix like all your kind of, all your rows and all your columns, I think, by rows by these numbers and columns, kind of scale. And now take this vector. So you get this. Now n plus 1 vectors, right? N plus 2 vectors. Each vector gives you sphere. And so then each comes like the curvature, okay? K1, Kn plus 2, the curvature of corresponding sphere. Okay. And there's a theorem. I think it goes back to Descartes. And just this vector satisfies this equation. Just if I take this vector k of all these curvatures, that's this vector times this matrix. Take the transpose. Times k is equal to 0. This is very beautiful theorem. The curvature, like if you take a Coxeter polytope in your space, every side defines your sphere, and every sphere defines a curvature. So take this vector of curvatures, and then it satisfies quadratic equation, which corresponds to this. This is symmetric matrix corresponding to the Coxeter matrix.
What special properties of P are required for this?
So only this is a Koch's third. So this is just a. This is for any Koch's third polynomial. Okay, I'll give you the proof in a second.
No,
in one line.
Don't give us the proof. Tell us what the epsilon
means. Let's see the epsilon gasket.
Okay, the epsilon gasket is just it's a special matrix. So in the case of Apollonian gasket, you just take the special matrix. So okay, now let's see. Okay, if you have your cell phone, you can really Google it. It's called the KISS precise. And this is just, there's a first proof of this theorem was given in 1930 by chemist, Hedrick Soddy. He was a Nobel laureate in chemistry, but the proof was given as a poem. And the poem called KISS precise. So just the proof, if you read this poem, so this will be a proof, I think. Yes, so. Okay, so because, okay, I gave you a special case, of course. This is more general. And I gave a proof. But I think the KISS precise corresponds to gasket Apollonian. The gasket Apollonian, just your polytop is very simple, I think. Just so it just universal Koch's group. So all this Gram matrix just is really corresponds to vectors minus one here. And this is all vectors ones outside. So this is really circling of this one. So you take this row minus one, 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 and just take a circle matrix corresponding. So this is just your gram of p. So in this case, you don't need to normalize anything. This n kind of is an identity.
What's the meaning of this? I mean, this g of p, or actually,
is
g of p tilde? This is some quadratic form someplace? Or?
Yeah, just still, it's quadratic form, but only normalized from your gram matrix.
On the same space we started.
Yeah. I'll tell you later. But I think just like in this special case, in this when
this quadratic that you have that equation, that's nothing to do with the q that you spent all this time talking about.
This which quadric? This quadric just sits there. It's fundamental quadric in my space, right?
This is an equation. It looks like a quadratic equation.
Yeah, it's a quadratic equation.
Is
right?
That this Q or?
No, Q is fundamental quadric. Is my inner product in hyperbolic space.
Okay.
This quadric depends on my polytope.
Of course, yeah.
Okay, so this is just every Koch's third polytope defines a quadratic form because it defines a symmetric quadratic form. There's intersection of this E, I, and J, right? This is symmetric matrix. This is a quadric.
This is what you were telling me. That
but of course, it's just it's like Gram matrix of vectors in space.
You were telling me whenever you have a Koch's group, then you get a symmetric form on your space.
Of course, it's equivalent to this quadratic form because it's just a Koch's Gram matrix of vectors in the same hyperbolic space in the same signature. Of course, it's a different basis you can get fundamental quadratic. It's matrix it's still have the same signature. So if you take this particular polytope. So just you see, just this is polytope, for example, in the plane.
What were these EI and J's again?
It's
walls of the
it's plane. Normal vectors to your hyperplane.
And there's the right number of them? There's n of them? Or?
It's a simplex, right, because I take n plus 2 of them.
Oh.
I'm in HN plus 1, so I take n plus 2.
Couldn't there be more faces?
No more, but I consider only this polytope. I only consider simplices.
You only consider the case when the
M plus two
when the Koch's group is a when the thing is a simplex.
Right.
Yeah, it's a specific simplex.
Yeah, specific simplex.
Okay.
Yeah. Of course, I can take any reflection group. It's not a simplex.
Yeah.
Fundamental domain will be polytope, but not simplex. But I'm taking simplex. This I specify that just the number of vectors here one more than just the dimension of my space.
But you still get a quadratic form always, right? No matter.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there's no such theorem.
Yeah. And because if you take more than that's the linear dependent, right? It's not a basis.
Uh-huh.
My vectors form a basis in my space.
Yes.
Okay. So this I have take that, of course, this is corresponds to the generalization of this ideal triangle, right? Exactly. Because you see, what this angle means is just the angle just is equal to cosine pi over the, this is just one, Mij is equal to infinity. Okay? So like a three-dimensional space, it corresponds to ideal triangle. So you take this matrix circulant. Take this polytope. This is called Apollonian polytope. And then just what will be your G of P? What will be equation? So this is your matrix, right? So just it gives you equation for this like minus KI square, right? Curvatures, right? plus 2 sum of ki I j, right? Is equal to 0, right? Because this arrow.
Okay.
Right? Correspond. Put here k transpose, right?
Yeah, I don't doubt that this is correct. Yeah,
yeah, okay. And this is how quadratic form you write down from symmetric okay. matrix, right? You can, of course, rewrite it in just different way, right? By like as, I think it's 2 sum of ki square minus twice. Oh, this is 2. Something like 2 ki square minus sum of k square, right? Is that right?
Igor, honestly, instead of talking about the formulas, how about talking about why I should care about the formulas?
Okay. Yeah. No, I'll tell you what you care yeah. about this problem. So, okay, this is the, okay, we'll leave it in this way. So this is the famous Soddy equation. This I just, to prove that like I've, this is what's proven for in the case of n equal to 3, n equal to 2, right? So this for hyperbolic space H3. So it's like next dimension, okay? So this is the equation which you can read in just as a, the proof in the form of poema. Right. Four pairs of lips to kiss maybe involves no trigonometry. It's not so when four circles kiss, each one the other three. And why he is, this is the proof of this thing in terms of the point. Why is this? Because what does this condition mean geometrically? So it's easy to see that this condition means for the sphere, that just the corresponding spheres, just if just touch. So you have now n plus 2 spheres. Okay? And any two spheres are just tangent to each other. So they kind of kiss each other. They touch at one point, right? And so you start with four spheres which kiss each other. So for example, something like this. Okay? And then you have curvature here, like K1, K2, K3, and has K4 for the big one. Okay? And they satisfy this equation. Okay? But next you start doing this reflection group and start doing reflections because remember this group corresponding to this polytope, this is my universal Coxeter group. So you reflect, for example, with respect to the first vector, E1. So you have now four faces in the space. And reflect with respect to vector E1, like corresponding to the sphere. Okay. And see, so you find the fifth circle, which also touch all of the, just at see, you find this circle. So I'll get five circles which each pair kiss each other. Okay. In fact, there is a classical Apollonian theorem that tells you if you take three circles which tangent each other, just say kiss each other, there will be exactly two other circles which kiss these three circles. There's always a pair. And this kind of express terms of this quadratic equation.
Like if you're the inside circle and the outside circle.
Yeah.
Okay.
So just this is expressed by the equation. If you give me like fixed three equations, will be two solutions, this quadratic equation, with respect to K4. Like fixed K1, K2, K3. And from this equation, you find two more solutions, K4. And this solution gives you curvature like for this circle and the bigger circle. Like fixed K1, K3 gives you K1. And then you continue this way. You start reflecting with respect to this hyperplane and get more circles. For example, now you, next time you take reflecting with respect to this, and then you get like these three circles, and then they put a circle inside here. And doing this reflection, you can fill the spaces. And this is the Apollonian gasket. Just look at this. Google Apollonian gasket and see this in different colors. Just think how you kind of. And you can consider sphere packing, or in this case, circle packing of the plane, because you can consider that the exterior of the circle is also a kind of circle, or the kind of outside of the ball. And of course, this you get in every space. So this is a, and now you prove that just for, in this case, this was proven by these people, but again, this is the more general theorem. So just so if you, your limit set of this group, so, for example, limit set of this.
So the point here is that we could have some number, say, four. We had four nodal
yeah.
cortic surface. That would give us four reflections. And the reflections would be the inversions in the circles.
Yeah, exactly. Because and every reflection, of course, here just means a reflect inversion. That's what I'm doing. I think just so this geometry, this is just reflection corresponds inversion with respect to the circle K1. That's true. So in fact, just what's kind of nice thing.
If you were inverting around K1, you'd have something inside the circle K1.
I think I don't remember with respect to which circle you reflect here. I think it's really a reflection. Not
you take the
in fact, it's a reflection. In fact, this is a reflection with respect to orthogonal thing. You see, this kind of matrix, there is a kind of orthogonal matrix. There's a dual polytope.
So whenever you have three circles tangent,
you take the kind of circles that are perpendicular to
the circle. Perpendicular to both of them, all three of them, mm-hmm. and inverted that.
Yeah. Okay. So, but okay, what's the beauty of this kind of thing? Just like, for example, if you start with the circles which has all curvature integers, so you take integer solution of this quadratic equation, right? So matrix is an integer matrix in this case. And then you start doing your transformation. They preserve this quadratic form, preserve this matrix. You'll be always getting integers. And so the orbit of these four curvatures, so this kind of what's called the cluster. So you just start with four curvatures. And this means you choose your polytope. Choose your polytope. And then it gives you four sides, like we're doing this two-dimensional. Four sides. Each side gives you a circle. And you read off the curvature. And suppose you start with this four curvatures, which are integers. You can always do it. Okay? Then you apply a transformation from your group to this vector. And get another four circles. And they're again integers. And so somehow your universal Cox-Taylor groups acts on this integral solution for these quadratic equations. And now you ask, for example, how does curvature grow? So for example, circles obviously become smaller and smaller. And so curvature goes larger and larger. Okay. And so what's the asymptotic for this? So how quickly? For example, how many, you pick up arithmetical progressions, how many circles give you curvature which will be in this arithmetical progression? You know, count kind of the density of this number of circles. And this is all kind of things which studied by number theory. So, but again, this is example of this universal Cox-Taylor polytope, but you can take different matrix and just do exactly the same thing and get, and you prove, by the way, that union of the circles, the closure, take this all the circle that you get by all this process. You can start generating all the circles, and take the orbits of the room, and take the closure, and this is your limits of your Cox-Taylor group, of this particular Cox-Taylor group. And you can do it in more generality, I think, just so not only for the, this is called Apollonian case, the Apollonian. So Apollonian, again, Apollonian, polytope. And so usually it's considered only in dimension in H3. But you can do more general Cox-Taylor polytope. And so just you allow things here just which are greater than one. So just assume some of these planes are divergent. And the condition then. So this kind of polytope is called Boyd Maxwell polytopes. And what you do just your hyperplane just corresponds to a really inverse matrix. You take like a reflection with respect to GP inverse. Some kind of this, you think these things are roots in this system and kind of the things which bound the inverse polytope given by inverse matrix are weights somehow. And then this is your packing. And this is your Boyd-Maxwell packing. And then just you get kind of larger reflection groups. For example, you take like this reflection group. I think I'll 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 11. And get more general kind of set of polytopes, there also will be this equation for all these polytopes. and the Voigt-Maxwell gives a condition on polytope and condition on this matrix, for which the same will be true. So just the union of the circle packings will be just, it also will be just things which are union of spheres which only allow to touch each other, but it's more general than Apollonian. And just the same will be true, that limit set will be just closure of the of this spheres in general. And you study this as a Hausdorff dimension, and this related to this asymptotic of the distribution of cross, which I said. Okay, I think I said already too much. I think let's stop here.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, maybe the last lecture, I think, I don't know how much I have to bring. So I'll do this Cremona transformation.
Cremona transformation.
Okay. Okay.